The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Joe Biden is bringing Haiti to America. And I think if this guy has his way, all of America would eventually look like Haiti. The Democrats are creating a COVID caste system in America, one that totally violates the spirit of the Declaration of Independence. I want to go beyond the Durham indictment of Sussman. I want to talk about how the media plays a critical role in these Democratic-driven hoaxes and scams. And finally, I'm going to look at the debate over the Eucharist between Luther and Zwingli, a very interesting test of this idea of sola scriptura, all religious truth comes right out of the Bible. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
What is going on at our southern border? I mean, are there any Americans who are okay with this? There is a flood of Haitian refugees, thousands of them, that have been not only come to the border, not only been let in past the border, but are now being released throughout America. Now, the Biden administration is kind of putting out a big lie about we're sending them back. No, they're not. They're sending some of the unaccompanied single males back. But if you show up with kids, you are a, quote, family, even if you're not a real family. You know what they're going to do? Put you on a plane, put you on a train, disperse you throughout the United States. No COVID tests, no nothing. I mean, it seems to me Biden is not only inviting Haiti to come to America. And think about this. I mean, first of all, Haiti is an island. How did the 10,000 Haitians get to the Mexican border? They walk across the ocean? How'd they do it? I mean, I'm sure 1 billion Indians want to know. So that's the first mystery. Obviously, what's going on is you've got an organized movement here to take flights, to show up at the right place. You've got leftist lawyers telling you to, we'll tell you what you should say so you can get through the loophole that the Biden administration is exploiting here to let people in and let people stay, even while pretending they're not doing that. One woman in Del Rio, by the way, was asked, why'd you come? Why'd you come all the way from Chile to the Mexican border? She goes, quote, President Biden was letting people in. That's what she heard. And so she's basically responding to what she takes to be an open invitation. Now, here's Jen Psaki, who was pressed by Peter Doocy of Fox News to ask why these illegals are not being administered a COVID test. Here's her response. Listen.
So if somebody walks into the country, right across the river, does somebody ask them to see their vaccination card?
Well, let me explain to you again, Peter, how our process works. As individuals come across the border, and they are both assessed for whether they have any symptoms. If they have symptoms, the intention is for them to be quarantined. That is our process. They're not intending to stay here for a lengthy period of time. I don't think it's the same thing.
What? You know, first of all, we're told that you can be carrying COVID even if you don't have any obvious symptoms. Obviously, none of those people, having come a long way, I've come from Haiti, I've come from Chile, they're not going to confess, oh, I got COVID. No, they're not going to say that. Now, her point, Jen Psaki's point, is they don't plan to stay. And now, at the first glance, this is such a brazen lie, such a flat-out absurdity. Here's Bill Milligan, who covers this for Fox News in L.A., you know, and he's sort of taking her at face value and trying to correct the record, and he goes, because if anyone at the White House actually came down here and spoke to the immigrants, the migrants, they would realize these people have zero intention of leaving the U.S. and every intention of trying to stay permanently. You don't travel that far to spend a day or two in Del Rio and then leave. But see, this is all based on the assumption that Jen Psaki is kind of giving it to you straight. I think that Jen Psaki's meaning is something different. When she says they don't plan to stay, what she means is we don't plan to keep them here in the migrant facility for long. We have all kinds of plans to send them off to Cleveland. We have plans to send them off to Amarillo. We have plans to send them off to the suburbs of Minneapolis. So in other words, they're not going to be here long. She literally means at that facility. Now, one comical, slightly comical, the whole thing is just so pathetic, it's hard to get much laughter out of it. But with the federal government not doing its job, Texas is trying to do its job. And so thanks to Governor Abbott, you've got these Texas Rangers, and they're rounding up these illegals who are hiding in drain pipes. I mean, this is just unbelievable. Anyway, the funny thing is you've got these Texas Rangers, and of course some of them go on horseback. And so we've had all these images all the way being disseminated through leftist media, basically saying that the Texas Rangers are using whips on the migrants to, quote, round them up. And this is, of course, reminiscent of, like, Western movies, you know, the cowboy attitude and so on. And here's DHS Secretary Mayorkas. He goes, let me be clear. I, too, was horrified by the images captured by photographers with respect to Border Patrol agents. We don't condone any mistreatment. Now, of course, even though this has been widely disseminated, this issue of whipping the migrants, the simple truth of it is that you're basically dealing with, and here's an Axios article that's talking about this. It basically gives the idea that that these whips are being callously and cruelly used on the migrants, but they're not whips. They're reins. They're the reins of a horse. Now, apparently what's going on is that these guys are riding so-called Western style, and that means they're using the split rein. The reins are attached to the bit, but they're not attached to each other. So because they're long reins, if you take photos of them, they give the impression of being whips, but Border Patrol does not carry whips. So what you have here is the left trying to shift the narrative. They're trying to shift the narrative from we're letting the world in and everybody's coming into the United States and they're setting up shanties third world style and they're taking a major dump under our bridges and this is America. They don't want that narrative because they know that that's going to make even Democrats really nervous. So they're trying to shift it to the, oh, look at these cruel Texans whipping the migrants. So this is a classic example of trying to cover for Biden on the part of the media. And then, of course, the Biden administration reacts to this. But, oh, we are horrified. Oh, we won't stand for this. Kamala Harris, the same thing. This is a woman who doesn't actually go to the real border, doesn't see what's actually going on. She goes to stage points. She talks to a Border Patrol agent. That guy's, of course, instructed in advance, do not say a word about what's really happening. And so what we have once again is an attempt on the part of the media to put a fake narrative over on the American people, believing that you and I and all the rest of us are suckers. One cool thing about Mike Lindell is his new products are just as great as his old ones. And his new product, My Slippers. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop these slippers. They're designed to wear indoor or outdoor all day long. They're made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. They're made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, Mike is offering 50% off his new My Slippers. The My Slippers, by the way, are so comfortable. You're going to want to get some for the whole family. We actually did. Here's Danielle with her moccasins. And of course, Debbie and I just love ours. I got the moccasins. Debbie got the slip-ons. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Dinesh. You'll get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, the Giza Dream Sheets, the MyPillow mattress topper, the robes, the MyPillow towel sets. Call 800-876-0227. That's 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. Don't forget to use promo code Dinesh. The left is creating, through COVID, a social caste system in America. Now, this is a very shocking and disturbing development. And by the caste system, what I mean is they're creating two categories of American citizens. You may call them the superior people and the inferior people, or to put it in feudal terms, the aristocracy and the peasants. Now, I want to give you a little bit of a visual glimpse of what this looks like. Here is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, at the Met Gala. And I want to give you a little glimpse of what the scene looks like, because it was, there was a little clip put out by Vogue magazine, so we can look at it. And here it is. Take a peek. So if you look carefully, what you see is AOC is sort of Cinderella. She comes in with the white dress, of course, with the tax the rich label on the back. But you've got all these masked servants who are attending to her. So there's a sharp dichotomy between AOC, the princess. She doesn't wear a mask, of course, but all the attendants do, and there are at least three. They're putting on her shoes, they're fixing her dress, they're holding the train up. So there's a real visual image here of aristocracy, and it's not the only one. At the Emmys, this was all over the place. You see all these, you know, couples showing up, and they're, none of them are masked. But as you watch them walk off the stage, who's attending to them? A whole train of people leading them here, leading them there, and all those people are wearing masks. Obama's birthday bash. No masks. Why? Because that's the aristocracy. But the waiting staff, the people handing out the champagne, the people handing out the hors d'oeuvres, they're wearing masks. Recently, San Francisco Mayor London Breed, shown partying. No mask. And when she's asked about it, she's kind of honest. She goes, I was feeling the spirit, and I wasn't thinking about a mask. She goes, I don't really want to be, I don't want to be intimidated by the fun police. Wow, the fun police, really? So once again, what she's saying is, I'm the mayor of San Francisco. Why would these rules apply to me? I mean, it didn't even, she doesn't even cross her mind that she is accountable for the same rules she's imposing on kids, she's imposing on everybody else. Just recently, yesterday, Representative Pramila Jayapal, having a happy birthday party. You see her in a tiny room. She's surrounded by people, all her friends. None of them are wearing a mask. Now, again, it's not no defense. Let's remember, I'm vaccinated, because vaccinated people, we are told repeatedly by the CDC, can transmit COVID. So that is not a adequate reason for saying no masks for me. And so what you have here is, and very interestingly, after the Emmys, the LA County Public Health Department was asked, well, why is it the case that all these actors, all these producers, these directors, how come they don't get to wear a mask? And here's the interesting statement. This is from LA Health County. They say, quote, exceptions are made for film, television, and music productions. They go on to say, the Emmy Award show is a television production, and persons appearing on the show are considered performers. So if you're a performer, evidently you don't need a mask. Everybody else does. Now, I want to put this in a little bit of broader, perhaps even slightly philosophical context. When the Declaration of Independence says that all men are created equal, we're all created equal, there's a narrow way to interpret that, and there's a broader way. But both are, in fact, implied in the statement itself. The narrow way is that we're talking here not about equality of height or speed or strength, but we are talking about equality of rights. So all men are equal in rights. But that is not all that the Declaration of Independence means. It also means that we all have equal dignity. And this is the importance of the created equal, that God, in a sense, loves us all the same. And so we all have equal dignity. And in America, this has been interpreted to mean, correctly in my view, that no person is better than anyone else. You know, Elon Musk may have more money than me. Jeff Bezos may have more money than me, but he's not better than me. So this idea that no one is better, no one is a superior, no one is inherently occupying, if you will, a higher perch. America's not divided among aristocrats and peasants. See, this is the idea of equal dignity that is being violated here by the COVID caste system. Because remember, the COVID caste system isn't just about money. It isn't simply saying you're rich or you're poor, because see, the point about it is most Americans don't envy people who have more money, because they think, okay, fine, they earned it, but they have a nice life, but I have a nice life. They're not better than me. That's the key point. But this idea of equal dignity, which is the core meaning of the Declaration of Independence, is being flagrantly violated by the left. Even though the left claims to be marching behind the banner of equality, behind the banner of equity, the simple truth of it is, deep down, they don't believe a word of it. They truly think in their own hearts that they, at least the ruling class, are superior to the rest of us. I'm really excited to introduce you to a new sponsor of the show, Pure Talk. Now, if you're with Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, you're just paying too much for your wireless. Pure Talk uses the exact same network as one of those carriers, and you get the exact same coverage, but for half the price. Wow, that's right. With Pure Talk, the average family saves over $800 a year. How? It's simple. Lower overhead. You're not paying for thousands of retail stores, political and social initiatives, added perks that you pay for but never use. Just great coverage at a great price. Pure Talk sent me a phone so I could try out their service, and you know what? It works great. It works exactly the same as any other provider, but it costs a whole lot less. Get unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. You'll still want to get unlimited data? No problem. You can still get that and still save money. Go to puretalk.com and enter promo code Dinesh. You're going to get 50% off your first month. That's puretalk, puretalk.com, promo code Dinesh. Pure Talk is simply smarter wireless. One of the significant features of the elaborate hoax that is exposed by John Durham in his Sussman indictment, but an issue that has gone somewhat downplayed, if not ignored so far, is the role of the media. Because from the beginning, this is a scam. This is an attempt to pin the Russia collusion hoax on Trump. But it relies on the cooperation not just of the deep state. The FBI needs to begin an investigation. They have to kind of go along with the narrative. But then the key point, we leak the narrative to the media, and the media, we know, because they're on our side, wink, wink, will run with it. And this is the part of it I want to highlight now. The fraud requires not just the involvement, but the complicity. Typically the knowing complicity of the media. Now, Durham knows this. I'm going to read actually here. I have a copy of the indictment in front of me. I'm literally going to read the first two lines because they deal not with Sussman, not with Hillary, not with the FBI. They deal with the media. In or about late October 2016, approximately 1 week before the 2016 presidential election, multiple media outlets reported that the U.S. government authorities had received and were receiving allegations concerning a purported secret channel of communications between the Trump Organization, owned by Donald J. Trump, and a particular Russian bank. This is the so-called Alpha Bank. Now, what is Durham referring to? He's referring to two major articles, one written by Eric Lichtblau and Stephen Lee Myers in the New York Times, and the other by Franklin Foer, F-O-E-R, in Slate. And when the articles come out, what happens to them immediately, and this is kind of how the left moves on cue, is they're amplified by the television media. So, right when the articles are published, boom, here's Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. She's trumpeting the Alpha Bank story. There's, quote, unusual communication between Trump and the bank. And what's really funny is she shows all these documents and so on. It turns out all these documents are all fake. There's no communication. But here's Rachel Maddow running with the fake story. And then she brings on, this is never Trumper, Natasha Bertrand, and now a correspondent for CNN. She's joined by none other than Franklin Foer, the guy who wrote the article for Slate. And of course, the idea here is to take this evidence. Foer, of course, will repeat, basically the lies that he's picked up from Sussman. And then Bertrand is there to basically validate them. So she says, I'm now quoting Natasha Bertrand, "What more evidence do you need? It's very, very obvious." So you've got, first of all, a person with a pea brain and, you know, someone who's quite incapable of evaluating this evidence. It's very, very obvious, at least obvious to her, because after all, if Franklin Foer says it, if it's on MSNBC, if it's coming from a Democratic lawyer, it must be true. Now, Rachel Maddow then jumps on this And she says about Franklin Four, "We are blessed as a country to have journalists as talented as you and Franklin Four writing about this." So, you know, so what you see here is it's almost, you could call it the handoff, because you've got a lie, and by itself, it's just a lie sitting there, but it needs to be promulgated. And so what happens is the ordinary guy who's kind of gullible believes the lie. Why? Because if you ask him, well, how do you know this is true? You know, typical leftist, let's say, coming out of Columbia University. How do you know this is true? Well, you know, I saw it. First of all, I saw it on MSNBC. It was also on CNN. Wow, you know, there was an article. I think I saw it on Slate Magazine. It was even in the New York Times. So this poor guy thinks that there is corroborating evidence coming from multiple sources instead of what is in fact the case, the same lying bullet is ricocheting from one wall to the other. All these guys are picking up the same thread. They have no new evidence. What they're doing is they're essentially magnifying what they've been told. Of course, what they've been told is outright lies. It's a total setup. And then, of course, Hillary Clinton waltzes in at the end, having sort of, this is basically the arsonist showing up as the firefighter. She set the fire. She comes, "Oh, looky here. Something seems to be burning. I think I smell something. This is very troubling. Fortunately, I have some equipment in my truck. I'll be right back." So you have the heroine coming in at the end. And this is, of course, Hillary Clinton on Twitter. "It's time for Trump to answer serious questions about his ties to Russia." So the depth of lying on the part of these characters. But the point I'm trying to make is that this is lying. Even Hillary wouldn't be able to do what she does if she doesn't know that she's got the media in her back pocket. So this is, it seems to me, a real threat to our democracy. When Trump called the media the enemies of democracy, this is almost an understatement of the issue. Yes, we need a media in a free country, but by a media, what we mean is a critical eye on government instead of these lying hacks who are in bed with the deep state, who are in bed with the greatest connivers and mafia bosses in America. These are people who, far from being helpful to democracy, are in fact its deadly foes. When Debbie and I talked to Dr. Douglas Howard, the founder of Balance of Nature, he told us we're a long way from being healthy if we weren't eating enough fruits and veggies in our diet. He said, hey, try Balance of Nature just to see how you feel. And not only do we feel great, we feel like we're in our 20s and we have kids in their 20s, but we know we're getting what we need. We take 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies, all in 6 small capsules. They're absolutely no trouble swallowing, always fresh, nothing artificial. They smell great. And Debbie also swears by the fiber and spice. She says she's never been more regular. Invest in your health. Invest in your life. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code AMERICA. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code AMERICA. By now, you probably know the name Ashley Babbitt, the Trump supporter who seems to have been the only person killed, deliberately killed, on January 6th. But it took many weeks after Ashley Babbitt's death for us to even know who did it, to know the circumstances of that. But you probably don't know the name, or you might, Roseanne Boyland. And it turns out, and I'm relying here on the inimitable Julie Kelly's reporting in American Greatness, it could be that a second person, in fact, a second woman, was also killed. And again, this is not a case of Trumpsters killing anybody. This is a case of the police killing both Ashley Babbitt and possibly, Roseanne Boyland. Wow. Now, according to Julie, this is the real reason why the U.S. government does not want to release the 14,000 hours of footage that they have on the riot. Why wouldn't you release it? You have it. And the idea that you're only, even to the defense of particular cases, they're providing selective clips, they're providing limited discovery.
That's right, we can't release it all because, of course, security issues are
involved. What security issues are involved? Why can't you release it? Well, the answer would be, because we got something to hide. we did something terrible. We don't want the American we don't want the Trumpsters of any. We don't want a counter narrative to develop here that we killed not just one, but two people. Now, let's look at the circumstances of Roseanne Boylan's death. A lot of the violent clashes that occurred between police and protesters. There wasn't a whole lot of violence January 6th. A lot of people were just, you know, rummaging, walking around, shouting, waving their slogans, waving their banners. But there was some clashes and some punching, and there were spraying of chemicals going on. And much of this was occurring inside and outside the West Terrace Tunnel. This is, by the way, the tunnel that leads to the doors that open the Capitol building. Now, this is the location where Roseanne Boylan died. She's a Georgia woman. She's one of four Trump supporters who died on January 6th. But her case is very questionable. Now, the medical examiner who looked at her body decided that her death was due to, quote, acute amphetamine intoxication, manner of death accident. And so the assumption here is that she wasn't, in fact, killed, but rather there were substances in her body that caused her to die I won't say natural causes, but of those causes. Now, turns out that those weren't the only substances in her body. I'm now going to read from Philip Anderson. This is a guy, a protester, who was standing right next to Boylan when she passed out. And what he says is that the officers were spraying a kind of poison gas on the people there. And this is what caused Roseanne Boylan to become unable to breathe. This is what caused her to choke and lose consciousness. And so I'm going to quote him now. I don't know what type of gas the officers used, but I know for sure it was not tear gas. He says, this is an assigned affidavit. He goes, after the officer sprayed the gas at me, I could not breathe for longer than a few seconds. The gas caused me to collapse, where the police then proceeded to push others on top of me. There were others who collapsed because of these toxins as I did. The police continued hitting me and others. So the police are spraying these guys, and as they fall, they're pushing them on each other and hitting them. Now, I'm beginning to wonder here if this is the reason why the Capitol Police didn't want to have the... See, if you had the National Guard, the 10,000 National Guardsmen that Trump wanted, none of this would even happen. There'd be plenty of security. There'd be none of this going on. But the Capitol Police may have thought, we don't want the National Guard. We want to beat these people up. We want to basically force them into a situation where we have control over them. And so it could be. It appears possible now. And by the way, what Julie's done is she's reviewed the testimony of Sergeant Gonell, who testified, by the way, before the U.S. Congress. And he talked about giving CPR to one of the riders to save her life. And the timestamp of the narrative shows that this is, in fact, Roseanne Boylan. Roseanne Boylan collapses. She can't breathe because of this gas that they've pumped into her. Her friend Justin Winchell shouts, Roseanne, Roseanne, she's dead, she's dead. And by the time the police show up in a car to take her away, apparently she has blue lips, blood is coming out of her nose, and she dies. This does not look to me like some drug overdose due to what Roseanne Boylan did before. It looks to me like something that they put into her. At least this is a subject that demands further inquiry. Now, it's very interesting here that the left, the Democrats, the never-Trumpers have embraced officers Dunn and Gonell as heroes. In fact, these clowns who showed up before the Congress insisted that they were the ones nearly killed. Oh, man, you know, I felt an arm on my chest. It was excruciating. I'll never forget it. The other guy goes, it's worse than Iraq. This was worse than the Iraq War. Yeah, really. So, but the real question is, while pretending that their lives were in danger, is it possible that Dunn and Gonell, who, by the way, were at this exact location, were part of the group of jackbooted thugs, the police, who were unleashing on the Trump protesters gratuitously? And the net effect of that was they killed this poor woman, Roseanne Boylan. They don't want to fess up to it. They don't want to release the footage that might show it. this whole thing, there is a cover-up. There, and believe me, this is something that January 6th Commission will stay away from. This is something they don't want to touch. Why? They, inquiring minds don't want to know. They don't want you to know some of the atrocities perpetrated, not by the Trump supporters, but by the Nancy Pelosi-directed cops on that fateful day of January 6th. A few decades ago, private citizens used to be largely that private. What's changed? The internet. Think about everything you've browsed, searched for, watched, or tweeted. Now imagine all of that data being crawled through, collected, and aggregated by third parties into a permanent public record, your record. Having your private life exposed for others to see was once something only celebrities worried about. But in an era where everyone is online, everyone is a public figure. To keep my data private when I go online, I turn to ExpressVPN. Did you know there are hundreds of data brokers out there whose sole business it is to buy and sell your data? The worst part is they don't have to tell you who they're selling it to or to get your consent. One of these data points is your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. But with ExpressVPN, my connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and my IP address is masked. And I love just how easy ExpressVPN is to set up. No matter what device you're on, smartphone, laptop, smart TV, all you have to do is tap one button, boom, and you're protected. So if, like me, you believe your data is your business, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN on the market. Visit expressvpn.com/Dinesh and you'll get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/Dinesh. Go to expressvpn.com/Dinesh. My hero, our hero, the one and only Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, spoke recently at Notre Dame. And I want to draw out, there's been some media coverage of it, and the media coverage is basically focused on Clarence Thomas echoing the idea that the court has a certain independent or neutral status in which they are applying constitutional principles and can't be judged as mere political actors. Now, I made the point before, and Thomas doesn't really address this, that the left does act as political actors. And that poses a little bit of a problem of disproportion. We're playing neutral. They're playing favorites. And so it's not, in that sense, a level playing field. But Thomas goes on in the course of the speech to say interesting things that haven't been really reported. And so I read through the speech, and I want to highlight a couple of them for you. Now, by the way, Thomas was a guy, I knew him quite well in my old days in D.C. This is actually when he was at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission before he went on the court. And this is a guy with just a big heart and a booming laugh. And watching him go through the trauma of the Anita Hill hearings, the sort of, this was basically Kavanaugh before Kavanaugh. And it was just, for me, heartbreaking. And so right before he went on the court, I sent him a note that just said basically, listen, pal, just never forget what these guys tried to do to you. And he didn't reply to me, but I don't think he has. But nevertheless, in his speech at Notre Dame, he talks about how you overcome this kind of grinding humiliation, because this was a humiliation on a national stage. And Thomas tells the story of how, when he stole this elsewhere, he wrote a book, in fact, called My Grandfather's Son. Very interesting book, how he was raised not by his father so much as by his grandfather. And how his grandfather basically told him that God has a kind of big eye that is on all human beings. Quote, God is a big eye God. What a striking phrase. And so Thomas remembered, whatever you do, you're going to be accountable for it. You're under divine scrutiny. And Thomas says he tried to keep that in mind growing up. There was a point at which he sort of lost the faith. This was, he says, after Martin Luther King's assassination in 1968, he goes, I lost faith in the teachings of my childhood. I became essentially an angry man. He left the seminary. He was studying at that time to be a priest. And then he makes this very poignant observation, Thomas does. Sadly, the destructive disposition that I exhibited then appears to be celebrated today. So Thomas is saying this feeling that I don't belong in America, that I am driven by hatred, something that would have pulled him down, would have prevented him from rescuing his life, from finding purpose and happiness. This is now the ideology of the left. The left wants those kinds of deracinated, rootless, angry people. This is basically, I would say, the recruiting material for Black Lives Matter, for Antifa. And a student asks Thomas, you left the church when you left seminary. What brought you back? And Thomas says, well, eventually I grew up. Why did you come back? I ran out of options. And so what Thomas is saying here in his own wry way is that he realized that in the end, divine accountability is all there is. Divine accountability is not optional. It's not something where Clarence Thomas gets to say, well, God's eye is not on me because I refuse to believe in God. Well, you may not believe in God, but he still believes in you. He's still there. Your unwillingness to believe in him is like your unwillingness to believe in a tree. The tree is still standing there. Its existence doesn't depend on whether or not you believe in it. And then finally, I want to share this with you. Thomas has asked about these lawyers who show up before the court. Let's remember this is going to happen December 1 in the abortion case, the Mississippi case. And they make oral arguments. And there's a 30-minute limit, 30 minutes to make your case, even in a really important case. But the student asked Thomas, have you ever changed your mind? I mean, this is after reading the legal brief and thinking you come out on one side, by listening to a lawyer make an argument. It's a lawyer so had such a scintillating, persuasive presentation that you go, oh, I was leaning this way, but now I'm going the other way. And Thomas replies, almost never. And the audience starts laughing. And sometimes Thomas goes, there are cases where the lawyer's argument is so bad that it causes him to abandon the position he was previously leaning to. And then Thomas says, quote, sometimes... This is, he's giving advice. Just shut up and sit down. So in other words, you're making your case worse. Now, there was a disturbing scene at the end where a group of leftists and small group basically stood up and started shouting, I still believe Anita Hill. These are probably people who are like not even born at the time. I still believe Anita Hill. In other words, I'm a robot. The good news is that some security people show up, escort these characters out, and Thomas gets a standing ovation. By the way, this was part of multiple standing ovations. So sometimes we write off young people. We think they're all to the left. They're all lost. And Notre Dame these days is no longer the staunchly Catholic institution it once was. It does now lean left. But nevertheless, there's enough out there among people, students there, that gives you hope for the future. These are people who listen to the voice of truth, in this case coming from Clarence Thomas, and they respond to it. Just a few weeks ago, one of America's leading nonprofit law firms, the First Liberty Institute, asked patriots like you to sign their letter to help stop President Biden's radical scheme to pack the U.S. Supreme Court. Since then, 250,000 people have signed on, with tens of thousands joining their coalition every day. Franklin Graham, former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, Dr. James Dobson, the Family Policy Alliance, the Heritage Foundation, they're all on board. But we only have until September 29 to add your name before this goes off to the Biden Commission. Look, if we don't stop the radical left from installing four more justices so they can rig the system in their favor, it will end the rule of law as we know it in America. Please sign your name now. Debbie and I both have. Go to SupremeCoup, that's CoUP.com, to sign First Liberty's letter. SupremeCoup.com, and may God bless America. Guys, I'm really thrilled to welcome to the podcast Chris Weidner. Chris is a writer, an author, a business consultant, and he's also the president of the American Freedom Tour. We're going to talk about the tour, and I'm going to be part of it. I'm very excited about it. Chris, welcome to the podcast. Delighted you can join me. Tell people what the American Freedom Tour is, and also kind of how you and your team conceived the idea of this event, or maybe I should say series of events.
Yeah, well, thanks, especially Dinesh, for having me on your podcast. I really appreciate it, and appreciate that you're going to be there with us as one of our highlighted speakers. And so probably about 6 months ago, I'm from the motivational world. I'm a member of the Motivational Speakers Hall of Fame, and I've, you know, spoken all over the world. And my job has always been to inspire people. And as I look over the last 5 years, I just see conservatives being beaten up And to the point where I think good people are wondering, am I really that bad? Am I part of the basket of deplorables? Am I a misogynist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, you know, all the ists and all the phobics? And I think that it really stemmed from this idea of how can I take what I do as a speaker and an inspirer, and in my passionate love for politics, I ran for the U.S. Senate in 2010 in the state of Washington, and have been very involved in politics. I said, how can we blend those? How can we bring those folks who feel like they've been beaten up, the average man and woman who love conservatism, love the Constitution, but they just kind of, they need a place to come where they can look around and see thousands of other people and say, I'm not alone. And one of my favorite things that I've been telling people is when we show courage, we give other people backbone. And so that's really what it's about. We want to give people more backbone by showing them they're part of a larger movement and they're not as bad as everybody's telling them they are.
Well, one thing that occurs to me, Chris, is that in the aftermath of the election and Biden coming to office, we've also seen this kind of regime of censorship across social media. So the primary way that people communicate in public space today is being ruthlessly clamped down upon, and it's in a one-sided way. And I've noticed that there are people, even on Twitter and so on, who became demoralized. Some people just basically said, well, enough, I'm out of here. So it could be that a freedom tour is a mechanism for people to find a place where they can have their views elucidated, ratified, learn things that they didn't know before. Talk a little bit about who's the lineup. The first event is in Jacksonville. It's coming up October 8th and 9th. I think I speak on the 9th. Talk about who's in the Jacksonville lineup and kind of what's the rollout plan for the American Freedom Tour.
Yeah, so Jacksonville is 8th and 9th of October, and we have you, obviously. You're going to be amazing. We're really looking forward to that. I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. We have Donald Trump Jr. is also going to be there. Kayleigh McEnany is going to be there. Dan Bongino is one of our speakers. Sheriff David Clark is one of our speakers. And then we got on Friday. Our whole focus is freedom, right? So political freedom, health freedom, freedom of speech, Second Amendment, all those kinds of things. We're doing a day on Friday specifically focused on financial freedom. And we have Rabbi Daniel Lappin coming in. So very excited to have Rabbi Lappin, you know, the book, Thou Shall Prosper. But we're starting in Jacksonville. This is why I have Jacksonville Cityscape behind me. Then we're going to be in Columbus, Ohio later on that month. Then we're going to be in Kansas City, Missouri in November. And then we're going to end the year in December in Charlotte. And, you know, we were talking to the guys in Kansas City yesterday, and we were talking about this whole, you know, the lack of freedom, the censorship. And so we definitely want to get Senator Hawley there with us because if they can take his book away, just snatch it away, a sitting U.S. senator, what does that mean for the rest of us? And I think we need to stand up and show some courage.
And I know, Chris, that the plan is next year, if all goes well, to roll this out to basically to bring it all across America. Now, if people want to find out how they can get more information, what's the lineup now, and also a place to find out for the future, where should they go? What's the website where they can get all the information they need?
Yep, they can go to AmericanFreedomTour.com, AmericanFreedomTour.com, and it'll show kind of what we're up to. It'll give you some overview of the event. It'll tell you each individual event. You can click down and see the speakers registered there. And all the information you need, you can find right there at AmericanFreedomTour.com.
This is awesome. I'm excited. I hope you guys are too. If you can possibly make one of these events, you got to do it. Chris, thanks for coming on board. I really appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for having me, Dinesh.
Inflation is here. What's your solution? In their recent budget proposal, the White House Budget Office forecast inflation for this year, 2.1%. The real rate, over 5%. So inflation's here. It's coming faster than our government is prepared for. And their solution is to stick their heads in the sand. Well, don't stick your head in the sand. Hedge your savings against inflation by diversifying into gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. If you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it. it today. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. I'm continuing here my discussion of some of the central principles of the Reformation as articulated by its earliest and perhaps most famous exponent, namely Martin Luther. This is leading up to the great debate that occurred between Luther and the reformer Desiderius Erasmus, a debate about the soul and about free will. And I'm coming to that, but to get there, I have to spell out Luther's theology in its kind of original, brilliant, and controversial core. Now, the Reformation, as articulated by Luther, was about three things. Sola fide, salvation or justification by faith alone. Sola scriptura, all religious truth is and comes out of a single source, the Bible, only scripture. And the priesthood of the individual believer, which I'll talk about in a second. Now, what Luther is saying here with sola scriptura, I've spoke yesterday about justification by faith alone. I want to talk now about sola scriptura, because the idea here is that we have one Bible. It's God's revealed word. And so God's revealed word trumps everything. God's revealed word is normative for the entirety of Christian faith and Christian life. And its authority is independent of any external source. It's independent of papal decrees that come from the Pope. It's independent of church councils who can pronounce on it and attempt to interpret it, but who can't make any rule or proclamation that contravenes it, that doesn't, in a sense, rely on scripture. This is the meaning of sola scriptura. Now, because we live in an age of relativism in which people think like, well, this is, you know, my truth, that is your truth, we tend to impose this modern understanding on the Reformation. We tend to think that what Luther is basically saying is something like this, you know, you Catholics have your Bible and your view of the Bible, and I have my view. And then later, perhaps Luther will say the same thing about other branches, other sects of Protestant. You have your view of the Methodist reading, and you have the Calvinist reading, and I have the Lutheran reading. No, this is actually not what Luther is saying at all. Luther believes that there is one church, and there is one truth, and there is one Bible, and there is one Christianity. Now, he is also saying, in fairness, that he is it. That his reading of the Bible, his reading scripture, his reading of Christianity is the reading, and other readings are wrong. And I'm going to illustrate that today, perhaps continuing tomorrow, in a debate that leads up to the Erasmus debate. This is actually a clash between Luther and another reformer, the second most famous reformer of the early Reformation. This is Huldrych Zwingli. Now, some people think that the Lutheran idea of the priesthood of the individual believer means that everybody gets to read the Bible their own way. We're all priests in our own way, and we can basically determine our own truth by looking at the Bible ourselves and going, yeah, that's what it means for me. This is not what Luther means at all. The priesthood of the individual believer means something completely different. What it means is this. There are two ways of life. The priestly life, and you can call it the lay or secular life. So the priestly life is if you are a monk or a pastor. And the lay life, the secular life, is if you are, say, a butcher, or you're a mason, or you're an entrepreneur. And all that Luther means by the priesthood of the individual believer is that the lay or ordinary life is in no way inferior, is in no way less holy, doesn't have a less exalted position in God's eye than the priestly life. That's the meaning of the priesthood of the individual believer. So to repeat, Luther is never saying, this is my view of the Bible, you have your own view. For him, the truth of Christianity is at stake, and he is disclosing the one and only truth of Christianity that he believes has previously been obscured and distorted. And so we find out, and we see this in his clash with Zwingli, that Luther is just as emphatic in rejecting other types of Protestantism, other readings of the Bible, as he is in rejecting the papal or Catholic reading of the Bible. He thinks that the other reformers are just as wrong as the Catholics are. And we see this very clearly with Zwingli. I'll say a little word about Zwingli to set up the clash between Zwingli and Luther. Zwingli was Swiss. Luther was, of course, German. They were very different people. Luther was basically came by his ideas in the monastery. He was entombed in a monastery for more than a decade. He had a kind of personal anguish about how he could live up to the high ideals of God. Now, Zwingli was an urban guy. He made his career in Zurich, where he was the pastor of the largest church in Zurich. Zwingli, like Luther, began as a Catholic priest. But Zwingli was a cosmopolitan. He studied in Bern, he studied in Basel, and these became Swiss towns that became Zwingliite towns that joined, if you will, the Protestant Reformation, but they were in the Zwingli, not in the Lutheran camp. Zwingli, like Luther, revolted from the inside. He wasn't an outside revolutionary who challenged the Catholics. He was an insider, as I say, he was a priest. And he was a guy who decided ultimately that he would break with the doctrines of the Catholic Church and would establish the Reformation in Switzerland. The Reformation, by the way, divided Switzerland in much the same way that it divided Germany. Even today, if you go to the Bavarian part of Germany, it's largely Catholic. That's where, by the way, Debbie and I were there. We were filming Death of a Nation. That's the Catholic part of Germany. But the rest of Germany is Lutheran. And so we are living even now with the kind of after effects of things that happened long ago, almost half a millennium ago in the 16th century. But Switzerland, where Zwingli came from, was also divided into multiple Swiss cantons. These cantons are like little towns, and they all are fiercely independent. They run their own business. And so what happened is that when the Reformation broke out, three powerful cantons, Zurich, Basel, and Bern, all joined the Zwingliite Reformation. And joining the Zwingliite Reformation isn't that you've just got a lot of Protestants. No, they passed laws that basically said that this is going to be the teaching of the church in Basel, in Bern. No other teachings are permitted. Only this teaching is authorized. So by and large, you're talking with Zwingli about a unification of church and state. By the way, there were many cantons that said, we've had enough of this nonsense. We're going to stick with the Catholic side. And war broke out. And you can get a sense of the seriousness of the issues here because war breaks out between the cantons. Zwingli actually recommends an economic boycott of the Catholic cantons, which is done by the Protestant cantons. The Catholic cantons basically decide to go to war. And so war breaks out. And Zwingli, this pastor, basically puts on military uniform, gets on a horse, and goes into battle, where on the first day of battle he is killed. So this is an era in which religious conflict is bitter. The stakes are very high. These are people willing to die, not just for Christianity, but for their view of Christianity. And eventually Zwingli and Luther meet not in a friendly setting, but in a confrontational setting, nevertheless designed to bring the Reformation together, to unify the Lutherans and the Zwingliites to make a common cause, a single coalition against the Catholic emperor. This was Charles V. It does not go well. And the story of that, the story of how two of the leading Protestants could not come to terms, and in fact, in a sense, came to blows, is something I will reveal tomorrow. Okay, guys, we're going to do our mailbox today. Let's hear today's question. Here we go.
Dinesh, in my experience in the United States, all the Indian people that I've dealt with are highly intelligent and accomplished in whether it's medicine, engineering, business. So why is it that it seems like India is such a screwed up country? Why is it screwed up?
Well, it's true because of the brain drain, or to put it somewhat differently, the immigrants who show up in a country like America from another country, by and large, do represent the most ambitious, the most entrepreneurial. It's a selective group. It's not representative of the population as a whole. I can testify as someone who spent my first 17 years in India that there are lots of Indians who are just unbelievable dopes, who basically can't get it right on anything. I remember, you know, this is just a little kind of memory that flashes back to about 10th grade. I'd hear all these Indians at an event, and they all were in... They were all saying, you know, he asked me this, he asked me that. And I was like, guys, wait a minute. Didn't we all study in the same class? I mean, there's no such word as axe. It's not A-K-S. It is A-S-K. It is ask. And the guy go, well, yeah, exactly, axe. And I was like, ugh. Anyway, point I want to make is this, that that immigration draws out a subset of a population. These are the people who have the most chutzpah. They take the most risk and so on. Now, there's a second factor that's worth noting, and that is the system of government. India was socialist. India today, well, I wouldn't say it's fully capitalist, but it has a more liberalized form of economy. And I looked it up. The year I came to America, 1979, per capita income in India, $220. That's not per month. That's per year. Now, the buying power of $220, probably a couple of $1,000s in today's money, but that's per year. The per capita income of India today, $2,100 per year. So it's actually increased almost 10 times. And probably the purchasing power of $2,100 today in India is about $8,000 in American money. That's still not a lot, but it is enough to get by. India's doing better, and it's doing better not because the Indians somehow suddenly got smarter. It's doing better because of a free market system in India now that we didn't have before that is bringing out the innovation, hard work, and entrepreneurship in the Indian people.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.